Sometimes, when the moment is right and the sparks fly, dating can be magic. But even the most romantic connection can get a little awkward.
And the dog's kind of watching us at this point, and so it started to lick my ear.
True Dating Stories is the new CBC podcast that explores the messy corners of romance. Real-life tales told by the people who live them.
I'm tied up on this dude's bed, and there's nobody around to help.
True Dating Stories is available from CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Peter Oldring.
And I'm Pat Kelly, and you're listening to This Is That, the show that brings you stories you won't hear anywhere else.
News. Are you people mad?
This gives me great grief.
Fake news.
The very thought of that offends me.
It's a terrible idea.
Documentary.
Oh, I just love the idea.
Come on.
Interviews.
I just couldn't believe my ears.
This is that.
It's been an exciting week at the Canada Space Agency. On Tuesday, it was discovered that an unmanned spacecraft named Gordy that was launched in the 1970s and subsequently went missing has actually been located and may be returning to Earth. To tell us about his shock and excitement, we are joined by retired Space Agency engineer Larry Birnbaum, who was instrumental in championing Project Gordy those many, many years ago. Hello, Larry.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and allow me to wish you a congratulations, sir.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, this is big news. Certainly wasn't expecting to get that phone call, I'll tell you that much.
No, indeed. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you felt when you did receive the call that Project Gordy is, in fact, returning to Earth.
Oh, my goodness. I was absolutely floored, to tell you the truth. 43 years is a long time ago. I certainly had more hair back then. So I had kind of wiped Gordy from my memory, to tell you the truth. So to get that call, to find out that Gordy's on his way back to Earth, whoo doggy, I'll tell you, that is some validation for sure.
Well, Larry, take us back 43 years ago and tell us a little bit about the original purpose for Project Gordy. What was the spacecraft mission meant to accomplish?
Well, truthfully, there was no purpose other than to get him into outer space, right? You have to understand that the space program back then, I mean, we didn't have any resources at all, really. And so for the Canadians to get something into outer space, well, that was seen as an accomplishment. The Russians were doing this. The Americans were putting people on the moon. We just wanted to get something up there. And that's really what Project Gordy was. So a small team of engineers were put together. We said, well, do you think we can do it? Do we think we can get them up there? And lo and behold, we were able to launch Gordy successfully into outer space, but we had zero expectation that he would ever come back. And so to find out that he is, holy smokes, it means that we actually knew what we were doing.
Right. Well, now, what sort of information are you hoping that Gordy may have? Is there some scientific information?
Well, I'm not expecting any information because he wasn't equipped with any of that kind of equipment. I'll tell you, I'm pretty curious to find out how that bag of Hawkins cheesies did, because that's what I put that in there.
Well, it certainly is exciting. And do you have any of the information as to where and when Gordy is expected to return?
Well, they're saying maybe sometime next Tuesday and somewhere over Russia, which is, you know, that's a bit far for me to get to. Of course, I don't. You know, the pension's not as high as I'd want it to be, so I don't have the resources to travel as much as I would. So in a perfect scenario, we'll probably just watch it on television, crack a couple of cold ones, and, you know, say job well done.
Larry?
Yeah?
What if I told you that on behalf of everybody here at This Is That, we would like to fly you to wherever Gordy lands so that you could be there?
Are you kidding me?
Well, what if I told you that that's what we would like to do?
Oh, my goodness. That would be a trip of a lifetime for sure.
A very special reunion for a project that clearly you've spent a great deal of time working on as a younger man.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to sit down here for this. Wow, that's incredible.
Well, don't worry about sitting down. We can't do it because obviously we're publicly funded. We really can't do that. But it is a nice sentiment, isn't it?
Yeah.
We certainly wish that we could actually make it happen.
Okay.
But we cannot.
Right.
Well, thank you again for joining us, Larry, and congratulations on the exciting news that Gordy is coming home.
Thank you.
It's smaller than a T-Rex, but bigger than a bread box. Can you guess what it is? If you guessed a Telomatofabriosaurus, you are correct. And the Telomatofabriosaurus is exactly what a team of paleontologists have discovered lying on the muddy shores of the Dakota River. Greg Taylor, the lead on the team, joins us in studio to tell us more about this remarkable find and to give us some insight as to why they have given this new dinosaur the playful nickname Mr. Big Head.
Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, well, thank you very much for having me on the program.
I guess the big question is, we'll get into a little bit more description about how you found the dinosaur.
Yes.
Why on earth is this named Mr. Big Head?
Yes, well, it's sort of a funny way that we came about the nickname. Obviously, the name Telomatofabriosaurus is quite a mouthful. And so the group of scientists who were involved in the discovery, we said, well, we need something that just sort of, just that we can sort of refer to him in a shorthand way. So we sort of said, well, it's sort of like a Mr. Big Head. So we've just, that's sort of stuck.
Let's describe the features of this dinosaur.
Yes.
So it obviously has a big head. How big, yes, comparatively to the body, or
well,
what dimensions are we talking about?
It is, the body of the animal is something similar to a small fox or a sort of a large dog, but the head comparatively is 6 to 7 times larger than the body. So this is something sort of like a T-Rex head, almost similar to a smaller smart car.
It sounds like this is a very cumbersome creature.
Yes,
how would it have been mobile? How would it have moved around?
It would have been very difficult for this creature to navigate movement in any sense. This head is so comparatively large to this diminutive stature that it would have had to move in a backwards motion, just simply dragging this large cerebral cortex on the ground. And so in our minds, this would have been a very easy prey for larger dinosaurs. So.
Okay, so it was easy prey for larger dinosaurs.
Yes.
Do you have any indication about what it would have eaten? Was it a carnivore or a herbivore?
It's very difficult to say. At this point, it would seem that it would have eaten anything it could have sort of had near its face. So this would have been prehistoric grubs or possibly worms, branches, leaves, whatever it could have sort of grasped with its mouth while its head was on the ground.
Well, it's a fascinating creature. What happens to the fossils now? Where does it go? Has it been fully preserved?
Yes, we have preserved it, and it's going to be on display at the Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology for students and the general public to just simply go and sort of witness and observe and enjoy.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being here,
yes,
today, Dr. Taylor. It certainly was fascinating to hear about, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And now, another Golden Microphone Award-winning This Is That documentary. This piece is called Prize Fight.
It's Laugh Clappers, the game where you try to make your opponent laugh before they can make you clap.
And it's time to play Double Dice with 6 sides on each dice.
Welcome back to Inquisitive, the game where...
Dating back to the 1940s, the game show has been a popular staple on television. For over 15 years, programs like Talk Stoppers, Question Keepers, and Fiddle Riddlers have managed to completely dominate the ratings. The bottom line is, television viewers absolutely love the game show. But have you ever given any thought as to who typically goes on one of these shows as a contestant?
I don't know if you guys would think this is fun, but we could do it in the steam room. As long as it doesn't affect the equipment, just keep away from there because that's where the steam comes out.
Meet Canadian Dennis Carnes.
I actually won this, the whole steam room, a few years ago on a show called Blast from the Past.
Believe it or not, Dennis is a professional game show contestant, or as he likes to call himself,
I'm a button shark. Anyway, if it's getting too hot in here, you can just crack the door.
Dennis says that currently in the world, there are about 25 people like him, nondescript individuals that make their living solely on the prizes they win on various game shows. He says that for him, the decision to become a button shark was easy.
I was about 11 years old, and I remember watching a show on television called Cash Stackers.
Welcome back to Cash Stackers.
And the show itself is a pretty basic game show premise. Everyone starts with a stack of cash.
How many people can ride on a tandem bicycle?
You are asked questions. Every question you get right, your stack builds. Every question you get wrong, your stack dwindles.
Two.
That is correct, Diane, with a successful cash grab steal.
And I said to myself, you know what, this is what I want to do.
Since making the decision to become a professional contestant or a button shark, Dennis has been on over 125 game shows and has won over $900,000 in cash and prizes.
Wow, I've won cars, I've won motorcycles.
And our winner is Dennis!
I've won sport boats, I've won fishing boats, I've won fishing trips, I've won trips to Europe.
For 700, I will say tofu.
I've seen 6 of the 7 natural wonders of the world.
You're the biggest tattletale, Dennis!
Congratulations, Dennis. You are the loosest caboose.
I was on It's Inquisitive. I was on Laugh Clappers. History Hagglers was one that I was on for 3 weeks.
After listening to Dennis describe all of his success, it's clear that when it comes to the game show, Dennis knows what he is doing. In fact, many in the contestant community consider Dennis to be the best, or at the very least, the second best.
So, are you aware of Martin Valance then?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Martin.
My name is Martin Valance, and I am a button shark.
Okay, a lot of people talk about Martin. I don't, obviously I'm a little biased. I don't think that he's the best.
I am familiar with Dennis. Although we have never gone head-to-head on any game before, I'm very excited to play him on an upcoming taping of Block Blockers.
There is no question that Martin and Dennis are rivals, and although their upcoming appearance on Block Blockers may seem innocuous to the viewer at home, the fact is there is more at stake. Whoever prevails will be crowned the winningest game show contestant of all time.
But I am confident that I am the superior player, so.
Arriving at the studio where they tape Block Blockers, I'm disappointed to find that the environment is quite underwhelming compared to how it looks on television. The set simply consists of a host station and the podium where the contestants stand. Dennis and Martin and some of the other contestants are shuffled off to a green room and told to wait there until it's their turn to play. And with almost zero fanfare, the taping of Block Blockers begins.
So if everyone's ready, let's block.
I would believe that the answer is civil war.
I'm going to say the Treaty of Versailles.
I believe the answer to that is Abraham Lincoln for 2 blocks.
Martin, that's a triple block.
As predicted, after several hours of taping multiple shows, Martin and Dennis have made it through to the finals. I sneak in a quick chat with Dennis before the taping of the final round begins.
I'm a bit scattered here. I was on a couple of the Button Shark blogs and websites, and it seems like I'm kind of the underdog here, and it surprises me a little, to tell you the truth. Guys, can you just give me a second, please?
As the Block Blockers' famous block clock sounds, the Block Blockers showdown begins. At first, it seems like Martin may have the upper hand as he's racking up a lot of block stops.
And that moves you forward 4 blocks.
But then, something in Dennis appears to click. A calm comes over him that I'm now familiar with.
He is focused.
I'm going to say, was it Vincent van Gogh?
Correct.
Paris in 1802.
Correct.
I think Mark Twain was the author.
And that's a three-block block.
And I realize it doesn't matter what show he's on, because to Dennis, it's just a game show. It's what he does. Before I know it, he's unblocked a block blaster, and with just two quick blasts, he's reversed Martin's block stops.
For a block steal, the famous Beatles submarine was the color... Martin.
I'm going to say red.
Incorrect, I'm sorry.
For a two-block block, I'll say yellow.
Dennis, you've done it. That's 600 blocks. You are the new Block Blockers champion.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
For his efforts, Dennis has won a jet ski and a trip to Lake Tahoe. But more importantly, he is now the winningest game show contestant of all time. This is a title that Dennis certainly does not take lightly.
It just means everything. It just means everything to me, you know. To be the best, you know. I'm so sorry. It's something I've been working on for my whole life.
Before meeting Dennis, I hadn't given game show contestants much thought. But now, after living for a few days in Dennis's world, I take pause when I see those nondescript people standing behind a podium on television. I wonder, is this just another average Joe looking for a quick buck? Or is it a button shark in the making?
Oh, I'm just overcome here. I'm the best.
With my hand firmly on the buzzer, I'm Pat Kelly.
Sometimes, when the moment is right and the sparks fly, dating can be magic. But even the most romantic connection can get a little awkward.
And the dog's kind of watching us at this point, and so it started to lick my ear.
True Dating Stories is the new CBC podcast that explores the messy corners of romance. Real-life tales told by the people who lived them.
I'm tied up on this dude's bed, and there's nobody around to help.
True Dating Stories is available from CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I couldn't believe the program.
Give me a break.
This is That.
Disconnecting from other people because we are face down in our smartphones is an ever-growing problem. But a new app believes it has the solution. The app is called Connect, and its developer, Ian Talbot, joins me in studio to tell us how his app is reminding people to engage and socialize in the real world that surrounds them. Ian Talbot, it's a pleasure, and welcome to This Is That.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. It's a pleasure to be on the program with you.
Absolutely. And what an interesting app that you've developed. Certainly, people being face down in their phones does seem to be a modern problem.
Well, it certainly is. And that was kind of the impetus behind creating Connect. I had started to observe, and I'm sure you have everywhere, that people are having a little bit more of a difficult time in this day and age being social with one another. We're often buried into our phones, and personal story that really kind of launched this whole project for me was last year I was out for dinner with my wife, and it was our anniversary, and we both had our phones on the table. She was being a little bit more cautious about using hers, but there was a big sporting event on that evening, so I was constantly grabbing my phone and checking the score, and my wife was getting very frustrated with me.
I bet she was.
And she said, Ian, please put down the phone. So I would grab it again, and I'd check the score, and she said, you do it one more time. I'm putting that phone into the pitcher of water on the table, and when I reached for the phone, and I started checking, and she did. And for me, that was a big wake-up call for me to recognize that I was no longer able to engage with another human being under my own accord, that I needed some assistance. And that's where the light bulb went off for me. Why not create an app that notifies you when you are drifting away from an IRL conversation?
Okay, so how does Connect work then? How does the app work?
Well, it's very simple. What it is it uses your location setting and your physicality with your body to determine if you are spending too many minutes on end looking down at your phone. It will send you an alert. So, for example, during the course of this conversation, I've had the phone in the position in which I would be looking at it. So if I look at it now, just down here, it will send me an alert. There it goes. And that alert As text also comes up onto my phone saying, look up, okay. Look up. So I'm looking at you.
Yes, you are. Okay, so that's, I see. So it gives you that cue to remind you that you're in a conversation.
That's right. And if my eyes were to drift down again and I was ignoring you, okay, the phone is using the location to understand that you are, and here it is, here okay. It goes again.
Okay,
it's telling so me it's to look up.
Saying that
so
I'm
now
still
I will look up and
there
we will
you
have a conversation. Now, you know, starting a conversation is not always easy for people. So what the app also does is it senses silence. So if you are, you know, not an extroverted person,
right.
You know, it sends you the notification. That, oh, there we go.
Okay, so
sends
this
me
is...
to the notification. I'm now to look at you.
Okay, your eyes are up.
But then it's sending me a second notification here with a conversation starter.
Okay.
And this is a simple text that it's sending me. So here we go.
So this is
the conversation. Here it is. Okay. Have you ever been to New York?
No.
Fabulous.
Okay, so
I
understand.
Sensing again that I've looked down again. So then it's reminding me to hear what you have. Look, I'm looking up at
you
now. I want to know what you have to say.
Me?
Yes, it's saying look up. So it's telling me to look up at you. So yes?
Okay. Well, no, I see you.
Well, let me shuffle through and maybe another conversation starter is what we need here.
Well.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
What's that?
No. That means, well, that sends you when the conversation is stalled.
Okay.
So it's sending me another, so, okay, so hold on. Another conversation starter.
No need to find a starter if you don't want. I'm happy to ask a question.
Do you like your work?
Yes. Okay, is that just saying to send another?
No,
why don't I go ahead and ask
asking
another
me
question?
To look, okay, no, I'm looking at you. I'm not,
okay, no,
I'm
that's...
looking at him. Hold on just a second. Let's turn this off. Okay, that's stuck. I'm looking at you.
Okay, well, you can put that down if you want, and then...
Oh, well, if I put it down, then it thinks that I'm looking at it because it's a location-setting thing, so...
Okay,
I'll
well, then hold on to it.
Okay.
What's the feedback? What kind of feedback are you getting from Connect?
Oh, people are loving it. I mean, I've had emails from families of four that...
your eyes are down there again.
I'm getting emails from families saying you've really made supper time a better experience at our house because they all have their phones on the table.
Sure.
And they're getting these notifications to one another to engage with each other. And the conversation starters, I mean, it's a little jammed. I need to reboot. The conversation starters are a little bit more exciting than what I've given you here. Oh, yeah, this is a good one.
Okay.
Did you read the news?
Today? Yes.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah. That's
How about that, huh?
It was... Great, good headlines.
Good, yeah.
Okay,
I'm looking
it
at him.
Seems to me that, you know, if the purpose is to get people to socialize, aren't some of these auditory cues, aren't they distracting?
Well, I think the point is that the phone is not going anywhere. We're living with these things now, and all you have to do is see people on a bus or on
alerts,
a train.
There's a way to just turn off the alerts.
I'm drifting down, so I want to make sure that I'm really engaged with you right now.
Well, that's okay.
And I believe that I...
So where can people get Connect?
This is just sort of... They can get it on the App Store.
Okay. Okay. Well.
Why is that?
What an interesting new piece of technology!
That's because it doesn't know I'm at the CBC. That's why I've got to go.
Pleasure to have the opportunity.
Okay. There we go.
Pleasure to have this conversation with you, Mr. Talbot, and certainly if anyone else is interested in checking out Connect, they can get it in the App Store. We've been speaking to app developer Ian Talbot.
Do you live in town?
We're done.
This Is That prioritizes stories about people. Here is one now.
Art is typically defined as the expression of human imagination and creativity in a visual form such as painting or sculpture.
Hi, Lana, I'm Peter Oldring.
And it is appreciated primarily for its beauty or its emotional power.
Space in here.
Yeah, sorry about this.
But what if there wasn't anything to see?
Oh, watch out for that. That's
sorry, I didn't.
Is it still considered art if it's invisible?
So there's something right here.
Oh, yes. That's probably my favorite piece.
Is it a sculpture or a painting that we're.
It's a sculpture, it's an installation.
Lana Newstrom is a 27-year-old artist that's making a name for herself in the art world. She makes art you can't see. Her art is invisible.
You know, I did painting, I did sculpture, I did installation, I did Mod Podge, all of these styles, and, you know, no one was biting. No one was interested. No galleries would take my work. And then I thought, invisible art.
With Lana's invisible art, there's nothing to look at. Rather, the work exists solely in Lana's imagination. If this sounds confusing to you, you're not alone. Lana tells me how she goes about creating a work of invisible art.
Well, essentially what I do is, you know, I'll think, okay, what kind of medium am I going to work in today? Let's say, oh, okay, today I'm going to imagine making a sculpture. So I have to imagine the type of materials I'm going to collect. So I have to imagine balsa wood and some metal.
The tone, the color, the shape, me picking up. Oh, one's a little heavy.
Cyan, some ochres. I'm like, oh, this tree is going to go here. I'm going to use a number two brush.
Imagine getting some water. Oh, the water's out. I forgot to pay my bill.
Right. I have to call the water people. And I have to imagine them telling me that I have an overdue balance. So I have to imagine telling them, well, I think you're wrong. I actually did pay my bill last month. I should have water.
And all of this is just simply happening in your imagination.
Yeah.
Attention, everybody! Now listen, I know there's going to be a lot of hands working here, so let's pay attention to what we're doing.
Although the merits of Lana's work are highly debated, big players in the art world are taking notice.
Nothing gets hung unless Lana says it's a painting, because there's also some sculptures here, right? Okay.
As part of Art Week, Lana has been invited to put on an exhibition at New York's renowned Schoelberg Gallery. Schoelberg Gallery creator, Paul Rooney.
You know, a lot of people have a very difficult time trying to understand what it's like to be looking at one of Lana's imagined pieces.
Okay, Jose, would you please get the sculpture? And it's quite large, so you're going to have to lift with your legs.
It's heavier than that.
It's heavier than that, Lana's saying.
And to describe it in words, it kind of falls flat. But when you're there, when you're in the space, when you're in front of her pieces, you're overwhelmed by this feeling. It's almost a connection that defies the senses.
Game, and then we want sea foam in sea up here, yes?
Sea foam in sea is already actually hanging.
Oh, it is?
There. Yeah, it's there.
And also having Lana there to describe what you're looking at is very helpful, too.
But not everyone is buying into the buzz around Lana's work.
What Miss Newstrom's work is illustrating, in my opinion, is a lazy artist.
Art critic Morris Hedder.
We've actually seen this kind of thing before. In the 80s, there was an artist by the name of Pierre Lachance, and he would create these sculptures, and then he'd simply bury them in people's suburban backyards. Art, to have any credibility, you have to see it, you have to hear it, you have to be able to interact with it. In my opinion, what Miss Newstrom and Mr. Rooney are doing is fraudulent.
I didn't see you sneak in.
I did.
It's opening night at the Schoelberg Gallery. Paul tells me that it's an absolute who's who of the art world.
Great. This is fabulous. You guys really did knock it out of the park.
This is somebody hard to impress, I'll tell you.
It's a strange sight to see hundreds of people looking at blank walls, discussing what they think they feel, what they think they see.
We were just discussing this, and we were both saying that it makes us feel uncomfortable.
Yes, of course.
My wife said she was interested in a painting, the one with red, and I can't figure out what she's talking about.
You know what? I feel like I have seen some pieces, and then some I just can't seem to see.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is like a video installation, right?
Oh, you're actually not looking at anything right now.
The name tags are helpful because it at least shows you where they are.
How are you enjoying the artwork?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, it's obviously a lot better when they describe it.
I walked in, they were saying, you know, it's right there in front of you. And I said, what, the wall? And they were like, no, like right in front of the wall, between you and the wall. That's where it is. And I was like, huh, I don't get it.
Like, I don't know how many times I got to say this, but there's nothing there, all right? Like, I'm walking through the room and she's like, oh, don't walk through my piece. And I'm like, lady, there's nothing there. There's just air there.
Although it's hard to tell if people have responded favorably to the exhibition, Paul assures me that the show is a smashing success.
You know, I feel what might be a nice fit for you would be deception.
In fact, there's so much buzz around Lana's work that tonight she sold four pieces.
Which is a painting or is it a sculpture?
I don't know.
It's a sculpture.
Valued each at over $35,000.
Okay. Sculpture? Yeah, okay, that's great. Yeah, we'll do that.
We can deliver it to you.
You'll install this at our house, will you?
Yes, I will.
After spending time with Lana and Paul, I'm not sure that I'm any closer to understanding exactly what art is. But one thing is for certain. It's a lot easier to be critical if you can see it.
There's some red wine I've imagined over here, so please help yourself.
But I suppose that sometimes it's good to take a leap of faith and believe in the invisible.
Oh, no, my gosh, oh, my gosh. Migration game is missing. Migration game
what?
Has been stolen.
What?
Migration game has
oh,
been
no,
stolen.
No, no, sweetheart, no, it's fine. Huh? The name tag just fell off the wall. It's still here.
Oh.
For This Is That, I'm Peter Oldring.
At least I think it is.
Well, that was another episode of This Is That from CBC Podcasts. This show was created and performed by me, Pat Kelly.
And by me, Peter Oldring. With additional voices supplied by
Taz Van Rassel, Caitlin Howden, and Katie Crown.
Production support by Kelly and Kelly. Head of production, Lauren Berkovich. Senior producer and sound designer, Chris Kelly. Additional editing by Max Collins.
With special thanks to Mike Belazzo, Kurt Smeaton, and Chris Straw.
Roshni Nair is our digital coordinating producer.
Executive producers are Cecil Fernandez and Chris Oak.
Tanya Springer is the senior manager of CBC Podcasts, and Arif Nurani is the director.
Thanks for listening, and remember, if it's not this, then it must be that.
For more CBC Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.